I'm speaking today with Ramiro Garza, who is running for Congress in the newly created 34th District, down in, I don't know if you call it South Texas or the Rio Grande Valley, but tell me, Mr. Garza, why are you running for this office?
Yes, thank you. First of all, Mr. Cuff, for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Ramiro Garza, and I'm running for Congress basically because I want to put my experience of working in economic development and creating jobs for all of the South Texas region to work for the District 34. I care about what happens in this area, mostly South Texas. It's not just, you mentioned South Texas, it's South Texas, and it goes north to Central Texas, actually, Gonzales County. Now, of course, I grew up in South Texas. I was raised in Port Isabel, graduated high school there. I attended the University of Texas at Brownsville here at Texas Southmost College. And even though I was a working student, I was able to graduate there with a bachelor's degree in finance and also receive my master's degrees there. But my experience is working directly with communities and businesses in my career of working with communities, and both from the economic development sector to most recently being city manager. And I want to use that experience, Mr. Cuff, to help the residents of District 34 provide economic opportunities, and that's what I've been hearing throughout the district.
Now, you are, as you say, the city manager for Edinburgh, Texas. For people who may not know what that means, what exactly does a city manager do?
Well, it's a very good question, and I appreciate the opportunity to expand on that. City manager is basically a chief administrative officer for a community. And depending on a community, most communities in Texas have a council manager form of government. What that means is you have a mayor of a community, then you have their elected officials, and the charters state for those communities that they hire someone to run the day-to-day operations of a community. In Edinburgh in particular, it's a community of over 77,000 residents, and they have a council manager form of government. So city managers charged with our responsibility of presenting a balanced budget to the community, overseeing the day-to-day operations of the employees. In my particular case, we had over 700 employees managed a $100 million budget and make sure that we provide the services that the city provides in an efficient manner. And we have provided treated water. We also would oversee a regional landfill operation, as well as all the city services that provide, that most cities provide. And I was charged with the responsibility of overseeing that. That's what a city manager basically does. And we serve at the pleasure of the mayor and city council.
Okay. Now, as someone whose experience is in city government, you know, where do you see opportunities for, you know, a member of Congress to, you know, work better with local governments like Edinburgh, like Brownsville, and so on and so forth? Where do you see opportunities for there to be, you know, a better relationship between the cities and the federal government?
Well, I think there's plenty of opportunities there. You know, before I my career started in working with local governments, I started working in a federal empowerment zone. When Bill Clinton was president, he had these federal empowerment zones, and the Rio Grande Valley was designated as one of those zones. I worked directly in Cameron County in a small business incubator that was created. And one of the things I did is I helped small local businesses find capital, help them grow. In that process, I find myself working with communities. And what happened is I realized and recognized early on from that experience that it's important that, you know, the resources are provided sometimes by the federal government are provided in a way collectively to where all the organizations in a community, people in the community, are able to maximize those opportunities. And so government, local government serves that role. That's one of the roles they serve. And I think that as a congressman, I think it's extremely important that one understands the nature of local governments, the nature of how when resources are applied to a certain area, they don't just go to the local government, they go throughout the community. And I think that's one, experience that I provide, and I believe believe I'll be able to offer District 34 in a way that it can help the region grow and it can help us realize our full potential.
Okay. Obviously, the economy is on everyone's mind. You know, things are starting to do better. You know, numbers are better. People are getting more jobs now. What sorts of legislation would you support and want to work on in Congress to help maintain the economic recovery and help things grow further?
Okay, I appreciate that question also because, you know, I've been talking to people in the district throughout since I announced in December, and you're right, that isn't on people's mind. The economy is on people's mind, and I've been very clear with people that even though my experience is working directly and creating jobs, I realize that a congressman does not create jobs by filing the bill. And so let me just be real clear here and say that my plan, as far as the economy, is very simple. I plan to cultivate an environment that is conducive for economic opportunities. Now, what does that mean? It means that every legislation that I would support would be that will create jobs in District 34, broaden access to higher education, and at the same time expand transportation infrastructure. Those are some of the areas that I have been working directly with, and I intend to work that much closer with because those are key areas to, I believe, would help District 34. My background has taught me that manufacturing is going to be key, and there is quite a bit of opportunities in District 34 to support areas of which we could fund opportunities, whether it's interagencies. You know, we have our International Trade Administration that's under the Secretary of Commerce, Department of Commerce. There's just so many opportunities that I think we can help grow the manufacturing sector. The other one is education and workforce development. We need to work towards finding a way to filling that gap. And we have, the District 34 has a very young labor force, but we need to make sure that it is prepared for the new industry that's coming in. This District 34 is so diverse. We have areas, communities that are on the border with Mexico, whose opportunities, I believe, are very different than the opportunities on the north side of the district, just because of the geographic location. But I think there's some great opportunities there. And in the southern part of the district, you will see that we will need to make sure that we train all the young adults that we can. And the way to do that is to increase funding for the Trade Adjustment Assistance Center, and as well as the Workforce Investment Act programs. That those programs are available down this area that I believe are key to helping train our workforce. The other areas that I look at, like I mentioned, is the transportation. I know the transportation bill has been discussed recently. In fact, it's about to be passed, and I think that the transportation bill, for my particular purpose in District 34, we need to support the continuous improvements for the interstate highway system.
Let me interrupt you for a second. When you refer to the transportation bill, you're talking about the one that was passed in the Senate or the one that the House has been working on?
Well, the one that passed in the Senate, now it's the House is working on one as well. My point is that the bill that actually ultimately passes needs to be the one that includes enough funding to improve our roadways. I-69, Interstate 69 is the what we refer to as the interstate system that would truly connect South Texas really to the global marketplace. And at this point, I believe there was about 6 miles. I serve on the I-69 task force for the state of Texas, and there was 6.2-mile stretch that was designated from, I believe, I-37 near Cal Allen to Robstown in Nueces County. And while we celebrated a little bit for that full designation, I told folks there's still 594 miles to go of interstate quality system. And so I believe that there's much work to be done with that. I think that we need to work closely with the Federal Highway Administration to make sure that some of those areas that are rural in nature that transportation officials call for overpasses for those farm roads. We need to make sure those areas are excluded from that because of the nature of the highway system. As long as we protect and provide full access, I think we will be in a position to realize the interstate quality system. But those are just some of the things, Mr. Cupp, that I would advocate for, certainly that I believe would help improve the economy.
Okay. There's been a lot of talk lately also about making changes to the tax system in the United States. A lot of talk about tax rates that higher income folks pay and tax loopholes and all sorts of things. Let me ask you just sort of broadly, what if any changes to the U.S. tax system would you favor?
Well, I concur with what you just mentioned. I don't want to elaborate right now exactly on the exact process that needs to be changed, but I do think that there just needs to be some, there is some inequality right now. And I believe that, I agree with your statement that you mentioned. I think that the way it's set up right now, there is some loopholes that I believe would, I happen to believe would help us meet some of our deficits just based on those loopholes themselves. I don't believe that the tax rate, the taxes that people pay right now are being paid equally by everyone. And certainly I think there does need to be some changes to that. There needs to be, we need to strive towards a process where everybody pays their fair share.
Okay. The District 34, is still feeling to a large degree the effects of last year's drought. Well, there's been a lot of rain in some other parts of the state, but it hasn't unfortunately done much down in that area. Do you believe that there should be some federal assistance for the region to help with the effects of the drought?
Yes, sir. I do believe so. We have, you're right, that has been, it's been a little better this year, but it's still not anywhere where we need to be. I happen to, you know, the drought is such a serious issue. I happen to believe that, you know, it does require some assistance. I don't want to say much like a natural disaster assistance, because we do know that those vary in nature, and but it is a disaster for, I consider it a disaster for our area because, you know, this is for small communities, I can tell you from my experience. You know, it is such a, you know, cities, for example, in the Rio Grande Valley, rely on the Rio Grande River, for example, you know, to pump the water into their plants and then get treated to then, you know, provide drinking water for folks. People and that are looking to establish their business rely on water as well for this area. But I think, and not to mention the farmers. And when you have small communities that are having to get temporary pumps to pump from their reservoirs into the plants, that's a serious issue. And I believe that there does need to be assistance, and there's, that assistance could be in many forms. I mean, there's already processes in place, for example, through the Environmental Protection Agency, from other organizations that provide the work with communities to provide safe drinking water, for example. There's already programs in place that I believe can be supported in a way that communities can have access to build new treatment facilities or, you know, buy water rights as well. And I would support those efforts, quite frankly.
Okay. What does comprehensive immigration reform look like to you? What do you want to see happen? What would you support?
Well, I would, first of all, let's kind of break it down a little bit, because I believe there's sometimes a mixed messages that are sent with immigration. To me, comprehensive immigration means that you provide folks a pathway to citizenship. I just don't think we all should agree that it is, right now our system is broken. It does need reform, but they need to be realistic and reflect, I think, our values. I think America needs to accept the fact that there are probably about four or five major industries that rely on undocumented labor, such as the case in the agriculture industry, where I was told that I think about half of the workers are undocumented. You know, there's, I believe, about undocumented individuals, and the answer is not, well, let's get them together and send them back to where they're from. I believe that they are in itself an economic engine that are behind several industries, and I believe should be provided a pathway to citizenship. But I think that there's a way to do this in a way that we can provide some reform. And while I say all these things, Mr. Cuff, I it should be stated also that while I feel that way, I do think that we do need to be tough on border security. Okay, as I say that, you know, we need to make sure that we secure our borders. And the way to do that is not by building a border wall. The way to do that is by investing in our ports of entry. Our ports of entry right now, according to our government accountability offices, they are in need of major repairs, major upgrades, not just in personnel, but also in the actual ports, the actual technology that's needed at our ports of entry. I think it was estimated about $6 billion is what's needed, according to the Texas Border Coalition. And there's about 6,000 new agents needed. I think that's a way to, or that's what I think when people mention comprehensive immigration. It's not just reforming our system, but it's also securing our border.
Okay. As we speak, the Supreme Court is about to hear opening arguments in the lawsuit over the constitutionality of the healthcare bill, Obamacare, the PPACA, Affordable Care Act. You know, obviously a lot of that law has not yet taken effect, but some parts of it have. What effects do you see that law having in your district? And, you know, going forward, let's assume that it's upheld. Going forward, what changes and addition, you know, changes, enhancements, modifications would you like to see made to that law going forward?
Well, let me just be clear that I guess before I state my thoughts on healthcare, I think that health insurance is a right, not a privilege. I think that the main thing about this bill, which I have to tell you directly, that you know, my thoughts on this is that you know, something was done about healthcare. And I think it was a very courageous move that was done, given the fact that, you know, our insurance premiums were just rising every year, year after year. And I don't believe that there was more coverage associated with those increases in premiums. So I think that my thoughts on the medical Affordable Medical Act, Health Care Act, are that, you know, there is, I may not agree with all aspects of it, but I support it. Because it is designed to put, I think, the individual in charge of your own health care. It does save money. It does reduce, you know, Medicare spending, according to the report that I saw. I believe over $500 billion over the next 10 years because of the in reductions of extra subsidies for some of the Advantage plans. But I think what's lost in all this message is that, you know, this Affordable Care Act is going to provide parents the opportunity to, you know, keep their young adults on their plans to their 26th birthday. You know, and it does provide tax credits to, you know, small businesses that choose to offer coverage for their employees. You know, it also does cover pre-existing conditions. And I think those are key areas for especially some of the areas that are in District 34, Cameron County in particular, which has three times the national rate on poverty exists in that county itself. There's quite a bit of a need there, and I think that one of the things that I don't support is the. Of course, I'm not sure about the Independent Medical Advisory Board. You know, that mandates cuts to pay physicians. I know that'll affect this area. I think that we need to determine how we can lessen that proposed cut to the payments of Medicare physicians. I think I know in South Texas, the Rio Grande Valley in particular, about a quarter of the workforce is in healthcare. So I do know that would affect the district, and would like to work towards finding a way to address that issue. It is a complicated issue, but nonetheless, we do need to come up with ways to address that provision. Overall, I think I believe that we have to protect our citizens. We have to take care of our own and ensure that you know, every person has the right to receive quality health care.
What is your opinion of the compromise the Obama administration put forward regarding the question of providing contraceptive coverage and religious institutions?
Well, I just want to clarify the issue also, or because unfortunately what gets out in the media is not always the entire picture. And I think that the fact is that I believe religious organizations, churches in particular, were excluded from being mandated to provide that to every woman. Now, but at the same time, I think what the president did is he came out and clarified the position also, and that, you know, universities and hospitals within the religious organizations would also not be required to pay. And so I think this is more of a women's health issue, in my opinion. I believe that women are in need of, if you ask women, they will tell you that this is a medication issue. That's how I was told the other day. It's a medication issue that reduces the risk for certain cancers and other things that need through this medication, the way I was told. And so I think that what the president did was clarify the issue in terms of making sure that it was clear that the churches and other religious organizations are not needing to, are not required to provide or pay for that service.
Okay. As you know, the redistricting process is still tied up in litigation. We have a map for this year that was largely the result of an agreement between Attorney General Greg Abbott and some of the plaintiffs, in particular the Latino Redistricting Task Force. Not all of the other plaintiffs cared for that agreement. They thought that the plaintiffs could have gotten more. The Latino Redistricting Task Force's argument was that the map as it stands did provide extra Latino opportunity districts. What's your opinion on the agreement that led to this interim map? And going forward, since the litigation is still ongoing, what, if any, changes would you like to see made to your district or in general?
Well, I think in general, I'm disappointed with the entire process. Personally, I can tell you that we're already now at the end of March. Our election should have already taken place. I think this should already have been agreed upon early on. And I think the way it turned out, I don't believe represents what the state of Texas actually looks like, okay, in my opinion. There's four new seats now in the state of Texas, and I don't believe that reflects the growth that we had the last census. They simply don't, if you look at the numbers. I don't believe that areas of interest should be divided the way this map, I think, appears to be. It divides certain areas. If you look at Hidalgo County in particular, it's divided among areas of major interest. If you look at, you know, where the actual lines are drawn, it divides, you know, you look at farm roads, you look at even a U.S. highway system that divides certain communities. In some communities that are small, less than 15,000 residents, but two-thirds of them are covered in one district, another third in another. I think there could have been ways to keep communities of interest together. I believe South Texas should have received a new district instead of the three that were kept, because there's three now. Even though the one I'm running in, 34, is a new number, it's really not a new seat that comes into the area. And I don't think that is right, only because of the growth that took place in this area. But nonetheless, these are temporary. I believe I respect the process in terms of it's still going before the Justice Department and going to be heard upon further. And I would hope that what's represented in the permanent maps is represents the true face of Texas.
Okay. If you are elected the nominee and President Obama were to call you up and say, Ramiro, I'd like to come down there and campaign with you, what do you say to him, and what would you like him to talk about in your district?
Well, I would obviously welcome welcome him to my district and alongside me to campaign, by all means, the President of the United States. And I believe that, any time you can bring the President of the United States down to your district, it will only help further your district's efforts to portray the needs of the area. And so I would welcome the opportunity for that. I would also want him to discuss some of the administration's initiatives that help this area. And I think the president coming down here and visiting our universities, our communities, I think would help. And, of course, I would ask the president that as he came down, if he could bring a few of his secretaries down, particularly Secretary of Commerce, and the transportation. Those are some of the key, cabinet-level folks that I would like our district to be visited by. But I will welcome that very much, sir.
All right. And when people do go to vote in this race, there's, I believe, a total of 11 candidates running. There's a lot of them. Why should people vote to make you the nominee for District 34 and not one of your opponents?
Well, look, I grew up believing in public service, and my experience has taught me that, when done right, you can do good in people's lives. The question really should be, are we doing as much as we can do, to help our area? And I don't think we are, and that's part of the reason I'm running. South Texas, as I mentioned earlier, has one of the highest rate of poverty. Cameron County, in particular, our classrooms are now crowded due to cuts in education. Other countries are producing more math and science folks than we are graduates, and I'm not satisfied despite having over a million people in South Texas carrying more than half of the nation's imports. We do not have an interstate system that connects us to the rest of the country. These are all the things that I believe make our economy strong, and I am the only candidate that has worked directly with communities. And most of these key issues that I believe can help the district move forward. And simply saying, I have the experience, I have the desire, and I think we need some new blood and someone that is able to help this region to be prepared as we move forward in this century.
Okay, Ramiro Garza, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity.